Brendan Sinclair's Business Mix, news and advice on marketing, media and the web.
You're listening to show number 41 on today, Thursday, June 29, 2006. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Brendan Sinclair, and as always, joined by...
Tina Goodman. Hi, everyone out there.
How you doing, Tina?
I'm fantastic, thanks. How are you going?
I'm fantastic, too. We get a lot of feedback asking for us to have a chat about outsourcing, so that's what today's show is about how to outsource to get other developers in terms of web sites or whatever. What we're about to say really applies across a range of industries.
So why would you want to subcontract? Why wouldn't you just want to sort of keep the work to yourself?
Particularly in web development, it's a fairly frequent scenario where you win a job, win another job, and then all of a sudden you're overwhelmed with work. What do you do? If you've got some subcontractors to help out, it makes it a lot easier. And for those growing a business, a way to grow a business is get out and you get the work, pay a subcontractor $30 an hour and you're charging $100 an hour, then you've got significantly more scope for growth. Subcontracting also gives you the ability to take on, obviously, a lot more work as well as provide a whole range of services that you otherwise mightn't be able to provide. So they're two great advantages. It really does increase your ability to get work that usually is outside your scope and your ability to fulfill that work to get it done at the cheapest possible rate. So they're the two main reasons you subcontract. I mean, we subcontract out predominantly when we're busy, when we haven't got those skills in-house, etc. So they're exactly the reasons that we do it.
I imagine there's a few barriers, though, to subcontract. Like, how do you know that the people you are dealing with are competent, and how do you know what you should pay them and charge?
Yeah, that's the difficulty of subcontracting, because if it was easy, it would be the perfect business model. You get all the work, You hand off, the work gets done, you get paid, everyone's happy.
But it's not easy?
Oh, no, it's an absolute pain. It's a nightmare if you don't follow some simple steps. But having said that, it's a nightmare when you do, occasionally. And I'll go through some experiences we've had.
So it's like anything else. If you manage it right, it goes a long way to making it easier, but you have to sort of watch out for a lot of things.
Yeah.
How do you go about finding the freelancers?
Oh, there's lots of different ways. A great way online is to network. Jump on the forums. Jump on, like, the SitePoint forums, the big web development forums there. Jump on places like Elance or Rentacoder, where you can put up your project, detail what it is, and people bid on it. They're two good ways. If you are online a lot like we are, you start to develop relationships with a whole range of people across a whole range of communities, from forums like that to blogs and on it goes. So if I was doing it now again from the start, I'd go Elance, Rentacoder, and the forums would be the main ones. And what we try and do is have a pool of subcontractors, so that we don't do so much these days because we're doing a lot more of our own stuff. But when we first started out, the first 3 or 4 years, I would have, I think it was like 4 or 5 different designers, an Indian person, an American, there was a UK guy, South African, I think, and a local guy. So we had 4 or 5 designers all around the world so that we could shoot them out work at any time. Now, what we would do also would be continually get in designers and give them small jobs so that when a big job came up, we had another talented designer to call on. So we'd shoot the proposal out to these 5 designers. So give us a quote, let us know when you can do the work by all the rest of it.
Yep.
And I'd shoot the quote back and say, yep, we can do it for this amount. And then we would have a good idea of how good these guys were because we've worked with them before, because we've given them jobs before. It's exactly how we employed Anthony here in the office. We got him to do a little programming job. He was good. He not only did the job, but he communicated really well. So we thought, okay, we'll keep him in mind for bigger jobs, which we did, which eventually led to full-time employment here. So that's the perfect kind of case. So, yeah, number one, get a pool of subcontractors in and test them out, because you really don't know what they're going to be like until you test them out. We've had an experience just recently where we subcontracted a guy out for a job for an existing client for skills that we didn't have.
You have been complaining about that job a little bit around the office?
Oh, it's a bloody nightmare. This guy has not finished the job off. His customer service has been just a bloody abysmal. Absolutely no communication with us or our client, and it's been a disaster from go to woe. Now, this guy thinks it's just a can't remember, about a $500 job. It's nothing.
Mm.
But what he doesn't realise is that I've had that client for years. One of the owners of that company is has other websites with us. That website that he's done a tiny... No, he didn't even work on the website. Worked on a something else. That client is about to redevelop their website, and on it goes, on it goes, on it goes. And it, he's, you know, potentially cost me $20,000, $30,000 worth of work.
Yeah.
Now, if I didn't already have a good existing relationship with that client, I've got no doubt that this guy would have cost me that job. But because I've got a good existing relationship with the client, I've rung them up. I've gone, okay, this is the deal. This isn't working out. Let's get somebody else. Boom, boom, boom. And they've gone, yep, no worries. That's a good solution, because what it's just not happening. The owner and I have, you know, known each other for years. So yeah, lucky for that, or I was screwed and I would have lost that, you know, that client, or potentially two decent-sized websites and their ongoing care.
So how do you choose that pool of guys that you're going to work with? What qualities do you look for in freelancers or subcontractors?
Obviously, there's their ability to do the job. That's the number one thing. So,
how do you judge that ability?
You want to check their previous work. You want to check any references they can provide you, and always check the references, because that's when you're going to get some good information.
Yep.
Now, having said that, people aren't going to put down someone who they've done a poor job for as a reference, so take it with a grain of salt, but you'll get a fairly good idea. See how they conduct themselves in their meetings with you. I know Anthony's communication with us was absolutely superb, and that was one of the key criteria. The fact that he was a good programmer as well obviously helped.
Mm.
But the fact that he kept us informed all through the stages and kept at us was a big part of it. So check them out. Check out their references. Check out their previous work. And then start giving them little jobs. And check out how they conduct themselves, whether they do keep in contact, whether they do meet their deadlines. And as soon as they don't meet their deadlines, then get rid of them, because you can't take the risk. And again, we've had subcontractors before where, yep, we'll have this job done in 3 days at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, guaranteed.
So and deadlines are very important?
Deadlines are critical, because if they don't make the deadline, then you can't trust them anymore. You can't, when the pressure is on for you to produce a job at short term or whatever, you need to be able to be absolutely guaranteed that you're going to get that work at that time. And I was started off by being fairly relaxed about it and go, okay, that's fine, you've been busy, and that's how my email's been down, or I've been really busy, so it's so late.
Mm.
But after a while, I'd go, no, that's it. You said you're going to deliver it then, you haven't. Our terms of our agreement was that you're going to deliver the project at this time for this much money, so don't even bother. And then I started to become much clearer, probably as a result of that. Maybe my communication wasn't right, and specify very directly and exactly what was expected of them.
Do you think that's an important thing too, to specify exactly what you want?
Yeah, that communication's critical. You've got to detail every last aspect. You've got to give them a full brief about the project. You've got to give them the background information, the constraints, the delivery time, the payment times, what sort of adjustments from client feedback they'll need to make.
I can imagine that makes their job easier as well. And also I can imagine that a decent freelancer who's done a bit of work would want that. They would want to know exactly what's expected of them and exactly when they're going to get paid.
Yeah, and that makes it so much easier for everyone. So if they know that that's the expectation, then they're far more likely to obviously meet it. And that's maybe where I've gone wrong with this last job, because I didn't have a full understanding, or don't have the skills that this guy's have, and wasn't aware of the requirements of the job, then maybe I couldn't communicate as effectively as possible.
Is there anything else that you look for personality-wise in a freelancer?
Well, it depends on the job. Obviously, creative people tend to be a bit... well, look at you, tend to be a bit...
Obviously, the fairy.
Programming people seem to be a lot more detailed and precise in their communication. Yeah. So that's too tough to tell. But like I say, just try as many out as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Sift through them and find the good ones and go from there.
After a while, do you get a feel for who's good and who's not?
Yeah, you think you do, but sometimes that can bite you on the bum. Yeah, that can lull you into a false sense of security. And like, we had a guy that designed for us probably for 12 months, Indian guy, great designs. Can still remember his name, a few years ago now. And then all of a sudden you'd want a job done by the end of the week, and he's been producing jobs by the end of the week for the last year, and then all of a sudden you can't track him down, and his emails become spasmodic, and you can tell that you're not actually dealing with the same guy because it's not the same sort of conversation. So he's got busy, he's employed people, and he's trying to fob the work off to them, and it's just not happening. And so those sort of considerations. So, yeah, there's lots of issues because you lose control, and it's all about having control, because I've got to be able to say to my client, this job will be finished by Friday at 1 p.m. And so I need to know that on Thursday at 1 p.m. I'm going to have it finished in my hands by my subcontractor. And if I can't guarantee that, then it's just too hard.
Yeah.
And if you have to pay a bit more extra to get that, then that's what you've got to do to try and motivate people. But, yeah, that's a key consideration.
So what can you do after finding a good freelancer to help keep them motivated and keep them wanting to work for you?
Well, it's generally about money, because they're in a business and all the rest. So number one, if they're great, give them bonuses. If you think that, hey, I'm getting a cheap deal here, give them a bonus. Even if you don't think you're getting a cheap deal, give them a bonus. And try and identify how best that bonus is provided. Is it going to be cash? Is it going to be a gift? Is it going to be a thank you note? Whatever it happens to be. With other people, quite often it's, you know, just the acknowledgement, being acknowledged as part of your team. We've said to subcontractors before, look, if you've designed the website, feel free to stick it on your portfolio page on your website. We've got no drama with that, and link over to the site, because we always tell clients that we're going to get this one subcontracted out, this design, because we know just the guy who's right for this sort of design. His style fits in with what your niche market is, etc. Yep. So it's always a fairly transparent process that we go through. So we try and provide added value to the subcontractor by paying them well, giving them a bonus, and or enabling them to showcase what work they have done on their own portfolio, where a lot of the times they're unable to do that.
Yep.
And make them feel part of the team, you know. Send them a Christmas present, send them a birthday present, send them a thank you note. All those things, it's easy enough to do. And
I think that small thing would go a long way, because I can imagine some, you know, girl in India sitting just doing all these different jobs for different people. You are going to stand out if you're the only one that sends her, like, a birthday present or...
Yeah, because you're building, like, a relationship.
A card, or, and then she's going to remember you and remember your jobs if you treat her well.
Exactly. Develop those relationships, because as a supplier, that person would never get acknowledged as part of your team. But if you do, hey, you've got a person that's going to go that extra yard for you. The great thing about developing relationships with your key people, with your key subcontractors, is that you start to develop that trust. And I'll give you a good example. I remember the Indian contractor that we used a few years ago. We provided her with the brief, and she quoted on that, and it was quite a bit of money. I can't remember how much. Let's say it was, you know, $5,000-$6,000 for the job. We thought it was a major sort of job. Anyway, she's gone to do the job, and I've given her a bit of feedback, and then I've gone, oh, no, I don't want it done like that. I want it done like this. And bang, it was literally a two-day job. So she said, oh, God, I've completely misconstrued the brief.
Yeah.
So it's not a $6,000 job at all. That's only a $1,000 job or whatever it was.
Yep.
So doing things like that obviously makes her incredibly trustworthy in our eyes.
Yeah.
And I always used to say to my subcontractors that, look, you've quoted for this job, and we understand that sometimes these things can take longer, sometimes they can take less. If you quote on this job and you do it and it takes you a lot longer than you anticipate, just say to me, Brennan, this has taken me an absolute bucket load more time because of this, this and this. Give me more money, then we'll give you more money. There's no drama there, because you've got to just keep that relationship going if the person is good and decent and trustworthy. And obviously you're only going to do that with people you've been working with for a while.
Yeah.
But be open to those sort of things. Don't try and screw everyone down to the very last dollar, because, again, that's going to come and bite you later on when you need someone and that person's there and they go, no, you've screwed me before and it's not going to happen again. There's no value in working for you. So keep an open mind about those sort of things.
I think the thing is too, like, if just say you urgently needed something, someone you've developed a relationship with would be willing to put their other work aside and just say, yep, I'll just do that rush job for you and and then go back to normal, as long as you didn't expect it all the time. If you had the relationship, you could ask favours like that, and that could be really valuable.
Those things crop up all the time.
Yeah.
They really do.
So you said at the beginning that subcontracting can be difficult. What are the warning signs when a job's going bad, when it's a subcontractor is not living up to what they said they were going to do.
Generally, they start missing deadlines.
Yeah.
And then they start missing deadlines and then their communication drops off because at the start, before they've been paid, for instance, before they've been paid their deposit, let's say they're quoting on the job, you'll shoot them through an email. 5 minutes later, you'll have a reply.
Yeah.
Then
so you have little deadlines along the way, do you?
You try to. In a lot of jobs, you can't because it's just a day job. Just get it done and move on. But then as soon as they start missing deadlines and start not communicating, so you'll send them an email and then you won't get a response for a couple of days or you'll leave 3 messages on their phone and they won't ring back, those sort of things. Then you know things are starting to go a bit amiss and you really need to move to nip it in the bud because it can cost you a lot of money if they're the cause of your client being let down. So you need to, one thing you need is control of the client. So if you can avoid it, don't put them directly in contact with the client.
Yeah.
And also make it very clear that although they're working on Joe Smith's website, they're never ever to contact Joe Smith or the company or whatever.
Now, when you say nip it in the bud, do you mean sort of turn the designer around so that they then start doing the job properly?
Yeah, well, it all gets back to that communication, doesn't it? Yeah. You want to try and communicate as quickly as possible that, look, we're not happy with how this is progressing. We seem to be missing deadlines, boom, boom, boom. And then if there's not a resolution quickly, then just finish the relationship and move on, get someone else to do it. Because you just can't afford it. Because there's a lot of people out there with computer skills who are dying for the job. So just go and get someone else who's going to do the job, do it properly, and do it as they say they would.
So tell us a story then, Brendan. What's the worst case you've had of a subcontracted job going wrong?
Okay, I had a subcontractor who had access to the client's homepage.
Yeah.
And the client was getting absolute massive numbers of visitors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this subcontractor had his own website. So the subcontractor put a script on the client's homepage that as soon as that homepage was hit, the person would very quickly shoot over to my subcontractor's homepage and then he had a script on that would shoot them back again and keep them there. It would only be like for an instant and they wouldn't even know they'd visited the subcontractor's page.
Yeah.
And then because he was developing a website where he wanted to sell advertising space to advertisers based on his unique visitor numbers. How about that one?
Oh, no.
So I found that one. Just by looking at the website, I just happened to notice and going, oh, I wonder what that is there, and thought it must have been some sort of script remnant or something, but it wasn't. Had it checked out, got a written report by another programming company, and I've gone to the client, I've gone, look, this is what's happening with this subcontractor. Let's change all the access details, boom, 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 and then went to the subcontractor and said, okay, we know what you've been doing here, and let's finish the relationship, and that was it. So that's a pretty bad one. But I suppose what the thing on that one is access to the client's homepage. Should we have provided them with access? But at that stage, we needed access to the homepage. It just makes it easier.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier so they can update it.
And I'd worked with this guy before, so that's a beauty, isn't it?
Mm. So always just keep an eye on it. Never just assume, even if you worked with them before, that everything's going to be.
Yeah, because things can turn to crap like that.
So you went through how to find the subcontractors. You can find them on places like Elance and a couple of other ones.
Rent-A-Coder and forums and get out there in the industry.
And then you go through a process of evaluating them by checking what they've done before and looking at their references and that sort of thing.
Yep. Now, that's really hard to do because you won't always get great information, but you've got to have something to base on, and that's often all there is.
So whatever information you can find, check it out.
Yep.
And then try them on little jobs, make sure that the communication's kept up at all times, give them as a descriptive brief as possible.
That communication really is the critical aspect. Like in the ones that have gone pear-shaped, it's probably my fault because the communication hasn't been there, I guess.
Yeah, so the communication's probably the most important thing. And then as long as you keep communicating with them, make sure that they're doing their job, and if they're not, if warning signs start to pop up that they're not meeting deadlines and stuff, then just
Act decisively. Because there's more people out there that want the job than just this person. So act decisively, move on, forget about them and get the job done.
Yep, and when you find a good one, hold on to them, give them bonuses, treat them well and keep that communication up.
Yeah, and just develop that relationship. You know, give them a bit of a bonus, pay them well, be nice to them, send them thank you notes, all that sort of stuff, so they feel part of your team.
Are the good ones hard to find?
Yeah, they are. There's few and far between because, you know, they might be great programmers, for instance, but really poor communicators and don't keep you up to date. And that's as important as doing the job, in our view, because we need to know what's going on. So that's a really important part. So don't think just because you're a great web designer that you're going to get the job, because it doesn't work like that. You've got to be able to sell that you're a good, great web designer, as well as keep the person you're working with up to date and informed and happy.
So have those basic business.
Yeah, you've got to have the basic skills as well. And that's the difficulty, because you don't know how old this person is and those sort of things. And you could be dealing with someone who's, you know, hasn't quite developed those skills the way you might like.
Mm. So is there anything else you'd
That's about it.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. As usual, you can Skype us on Tailored with your feedback, or just visit tailoredpodcast.com. Bye from me.
And bye from me. Thanks for listening.
Brendan Sinclair's Business Myths, news and advice on marketing, media and the web.